Are we good with sound? Okay, great. Good morning. Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. So my talk today is about immediacy and some related threads, such as the nature, wisely meeting with the less pleasant stuff of life, the nature of expectations, and working with whatever we have. And it's also going to be about snow, so we should all be feeling cooler shortly. This will definitely be one of those the Dharma appears naturally in daily life talks. Rather than trying to define what I mean by immediacy, I think my take on it will become clear as the talk progresses. And I'm going to start with a story about what pulled me towards this topic. As background to the story, one of the differences among us is our preferred learning styles. Some of you learn primarily by reading and studying. Others might learn primarily by speaking and listening. Others perhaps best learn visually. My 10-month-old granddaughter learns primarily by looking, touching, and tasting. For me, for much of my life, I've learned physically. The physical action and sensations of my body have long been a primary teacher. And maybe this is the grown-up version of my daughter's looking, touching, and tasting, my granddaughter. I'm pretty sure that what I'll be talking about is relevant, whatever your learning style is. But if you're a non-physical learner, you may have to do a little bit of translation to find the relevancy. I'm definitely not suggesting that you try to change your primary learning style. I don't think that's easily doable, and probably not healthy. Okay, finally to the story. As of last winter, I was still downhill skiing. This is the snow now, feel it. I should mention that I'm a perennially intermediate telemark downhill skier. I sometimes think of telemark skiing as the dancing version of the more common parallel skiing. I didn't grow up skiing. I never skied until I was in my mid-20s, and I avoid most black diamond runs. So I'm not coming from a place of extreme skiing. I'm just an average skier, maybe with a Zen accent. And about that Zen accent, my skiing seems to be morphing more clearly into spiritual practice these last several years, and less an athletic or purely recreational one, as my story will illustrate. If you've been doing this Zen stuff for a while, you may have noticed that more and more of what you do tends to morph into spiritual practice over time. And just saying something briefly about that term spiritual practice. Spiritual is kind of a dangerous word here. So spiritual practice, what do I mean by that? I use the term as a pointer towards all those things we do to loosen our attachment to our unhealthy habits and habit energy and open to our connection with everything. So it's a pretty wide definition. Can you feel what I'm talking about there? So back to the skiing story. Two ski seasons ago, I wasn't much enjoying skiing. I was mainly feeling physically vulnerable doing it and usually somewhat anxious and fearful. I felt I needed conditions to be perfect before I'd even drive up to the mountain. And given the unpredictability and sometimes mixed messages about conditions and most snow and weather forecasts, I ended up intending to go up to the mountain and go ski, or I ended up intending and preparing to go skiing two or three times for every time that I actually got in the car and went. And when I did actually get to the mountain, I felt physically, mentally, and emotionally tight, vulnerable, fearful, resistant. When I mentioned my loss of enjoyment to some friends, they all affirmed that my sense of vulnerability was totally appropriate and realistic for someone my age. And that was 78 at that time, 2 winters ago. But the feedback actually had the probably unintended effect of deepening my attachment to my fear. It fed my belief in my storyline of the potential dangers. And along with a robust storyline comes less inclination to question it. The storyline becomes the believed reality of the situation. So, as a side note, I suggest that we be discerning about how we try to support people. In general, support the person, not the person's delusions. I thought I might be at the end of my skiing, but I decided to give it a try again this past season. My tightness and anxiety from the previous season lingered on for me as somehow false or suspect. Something was out of whack. Something just didn't compute. Well, to my surprise, I'm sorry, I felt the need to push a little and verify that I was truly ready to give up on skiing. And to my surprise, in the second season of doubt, I felt totally different. Pretty much no anxiety or fear. Instead, I was just fully immersed in the activity, the immediacy of flowing down the mountain, the immediacy of meeting what was directly in front of me, literally. And I found this really interesting and very welcome. And I was and still am very curious about what changed. My curiosity will most likely bring me back to the mountain this coming winter. I have more to investigate about this. And as a physical learner, I investigate by doing it. My understanding at this point is that somehow I found a different mindset of just doing it, being in the immediacy of just meeting what was literally in front of me, no separation from the slope down, just skiing. Immediacy was exactly the word that came to mind as this was happening. But how did that come to be, coming from a place of fear? My experience of my own fear is that fear tends to reinforce itself. I didn't have any sense of effort around this. I wasn't consciously trying to be a better Zen skier. I wasn't trying to force my consciousness towards just wholeheartedly doing what's now. If there was any conceptual activity contributing to it, it was probably open curiosity. Not knowing, instead, just feeling open to what's next and wondering about this new experience I was having. And it was more an attitude than a thought. Getting off the lift, looking down at the slope and the possible runs. I could ski. I felt something like an open, I wonder what this will be. Let's see. And with an emphasis on that, let's see. And then mind and body played together to just ski down. Now, that kind of openness isn't available when we're stuck in a mental framework of fear. The mental framework of fear interprets everything as a threat, and our body and mind contract around that sense of threat. We're in an attitude of defense, an attitude of separation. And this is the heart of my talk today, the fearlessness and liberation of immediacy. Just do it. Nothing extra. At the time, I felt this as a very radical but effortless commitment to right now. I'm all in right now. A sense of just so. Our third Bodhisattva vow encourages this immediacy, this deep acceptance. It says, Dharma gates are boundless, I vow to enter them. It seems to be almost everybody's favorite Bodhisattva vow. Immediacy seems to come with some glow, a sense of intense aliveness, joy. But the glow was also a surprise to me. It was unbidden, unexpected, and a sense of exhilaration accompanied the immediacy of my nothing extra skiing. Now, I acknowledge that many find some sense of exhilaration in pushing against their limits of safety, zip lines, rock climbing, skydiving, paragliding, and such. But that's something else. I don't think it was a significant piece of what was going on for me in last season's skiing. I mostly wasn't in the mindset of pushing my boundaries of safety when I was skiing. I may have been doing some semi-conscious questioning of those boundaries. Again, attitude more than thought. But for the most part, I was just skiing. It seemed to me at the time that my unexpected joy was at least partly an effect of having been surprised. I went into the season expecting one outcome, disliking skiing and calling it quits, but I experienced something completely different. How wondrous. I generally appreciate surprises, especially those where I expect something to happen and something else doesn't instead, or when I think something is true or false and it turns out not to be. These surprises wake me up. It actually feels like waking up from a daze or deep sleep to a new, clearer reality. So, what have I learned from all this? What is the Dharma of fear and immediacy? Fear is a creation of mind. It's not intrinsic to any specific situation. And it's usually secondhand in the sense of it being separation from the imagined reality. I've always found it quite interesting that when I've been in truly dangerous or even life-threatening situations, fear hasn't been present. Fear usually comes long before in imagined situations, imagining what could go wrong, what could annoy or hurt or kill me or those close to me. And those actual life-threatening situations I've experienced were never predictable. They just happened, and my reaction in each was automatic, just responding to the now of the situation. And that's not exactly courage, it's just not fear. It's an instinctual immediacy. I suggest that immediacy, being all in, is possible in every situation. You don't have to be on snow skiing. It can be connecting with someone, or meditating, weeding the garden, or offering incense, or dancing, or whatever. In support of this claim, I mentioned this topic to several people in the last few weeks, and they all quickly responded with some similar experience that they've had around it, around that sense of immediacy. One said that that's exactly what he loves about kayaking, the sense of total commitment to what's happening, and that the only real danger is not being fully present. Another responded enthusiastically that she finds it in public speaking. And both of them expressed the sense of being all in with the situation that they described. If you feel some personal connection with what I'm talking about, I'd love to hear about it during the comments and questions period that's coming up. All in implies an attitude of acceptance of what's here now, no separation from what's here now. Any tinge of rejection of what's here now defeats the wonder that comes with our being fully here. Small self is not helpful in fully engaging with now. My sense is that the quantity of self that I was creating, identifying with, and indulging in around skiing and some other activities was directly related to my attitudes of vulnerability and fear. Immediacy jumping all in seems to mostly leave small self behind. Immediacy is a matter of this moment, right now. It's not an average over time. You're either fully here right now or you're not. And I experienced this immediacy more as a kind of grace than as anything I consciously did to make it happen. But 55 years of Zen practice probably had something to do with my allowing that grace to work. Grace is not a word I use very often. I'm usually quite separated from its Judeo-Christian usage, but it feels appropriate here. For me, it's not about some supreme being bestowing grace, but rather about surrendering separation from the universe and just allowing in whatever that brings. I want to explore a different thread now. When I first came up with this topic, I was feeling very physically capable. I had no question in my mind that I'd be able and wanting to ski again this coming winter. I wanted to explore this territory of fear and immediacy, and for me, skiing turns out to be a great way of doing that. But about 9 or 10 months ago, I started experiencing severe neck pain. And I tried lots of exercises, stretches, physical therapy, pharmaceuticals, massage, and so forth to deal with this, but the pain kept getting worse and more constant. By late afternoon, most days, I felt pretty much disabled. I couldn't move without stabbing pain that felt deep within my head. And even worse was sitting still. My neck would seize up in seconds. And you can imagine how that works with sitting zazen. This left me feeling distinctly non-athletic and feeling some fear around what was going on in my body. So talking about fearless, all in, downhill, telemark skiing felt a little fraudulent to me as I was developing this talk. And yet I now see this as part of the same exploration. What is holding me back right now from being fully present? What's holding me back right now from being all in this very moment? No matter what this moment is, even in the midst of serious, constant pain. I should note, by the by, that I'm in a new physical therapy regimen now, and my pain level has been a lot more bearable. So sometimes being all in isn't very glamorous. I first learned a few years ago that when all you've got is pain, then immediacy means all in with the pain. And that's not the same as being all in with the suffering. Suffering is a reaction to the pain and is an extra conceptual layer that we add to the pain. I think most of us, when dealing with significant or chronic pain, tend to get lost in various emotions such as fear, denial, anger, bargaining, depression. And I felt all of these during this pain period of mine. But I'm suggesting a different model of continuously bringing mindful attention back to what's here right now. If what's here right now is pain, then that becomes our object of mindfulness. Nothing extra is an important guideline with this. Nothing extra is an important guideline with this. We can be with our pain or with any of those emotions without adding extra in the way of stories of what happened or may happen, blame, and so forth. And yet we'll certainly add extra. That's part of being human. No problem. We just notice that conceptual extra and accept and let go of it too, as many times as need be. It's rejecting what's here now that's a problem. Everything outside of rejection is practice. And actually rejecting what's here now can also be invited into our practice. We can just notice that we're rejecting, accept that rejecting is what's here now for us, and repeatedly feel and let go of that tightness of body and mind that rejecting brings. Okay, let's investigate another thread, expectations. Expectations of what will happen to us. Expectations of who we expect to be at some future time. In my story, that I wouldn't enjoy this past ski season was one of my mistaken expectations. I mentioned this earlier in the context of my generally liking surprises, because they wake me up from whatever dream I'm lost in. I wonder if I would have liked the surprise of hating skiing if I came to it from enjoying skiing. I don't know that any of us can give a Dharma talk without pulling in a Nietzsche, impermanence, and that's what I'm doing in this thread. Expectations collide with a Nietzsche. Things change, outcomes change, we change, everything is in flux. And yet we tend to construct our lives around some presumption of predictability. I'm not suggesting we should eliminate any planning in our lives. We can't. Planning can be very useful for facilitating outcomes that we think will be favorable in some way or not unfavorable in other ways. But I suggest that all planning and all expectations benefit from a whole lot of humility. We take our best shot at navigating the unknown and accept what comes of it and learn what we can from that. I'll also suggest that there's some benefit in allowing some unpredictability in our lives. We don't have to plan out everything. It can be incredibly liberating to dive in and see what happens. I got some new running shoes from Nike a little bit ago. And after a few runs, I noticed that there was this really small, faint inscription just above the soles of the shoes. I started with their normal exhortation, just do it. But it went on, just do it, reason not required. My sense is that many, maybe most of the best things that have happened to me in my life, I blundered into. And this may be another example of that mystery that I'm calling grace. And this brings me obliquely to another thread, life goals. What really matters to you? What are you doing here? Why are you here? Dogen instructs us in Fukan Zengi, do not pass your days and nights in vain. He's calling us to our deepest aspirations. By life goals, I'm not referring to the superficial levels of transient fun, transient intellectual interests, accumulation of money or other tangible or intangible assets. I'm referring to something deeper. And you might find it by asking yourself questions like, what is the nature of your dukkha? And what do you feel called to do about it? What is the nature of your spiritual gravity, your spiritual instinct? What deeply pulls you? Or possibly this question, what is your gift to give? What do you have or who are you that you can and want to offer for the benefit of all beings? Kyogen, in his Dharma talks, often spun off into numerous threads that seem to have little to do with the main topic, like I have today. And yet he was a quiet genius at pulling together all those threads by the end of the talk. So I give myself that challenge now, pulling the disparate threads of my talk together. So let's see, I brought up the fragility of expectations, the problem of believing in our limited small self-identity, the nature of fear, grace, and curiosity, the freedom and wonder of immediacy, dealing with pain and other unpleasant sensations, and paying attention to what deeply calls us. My journey into this topic started with my dukkha, not enjoying, actually being afraid of what I once enjoyed, skiing. And I could name a few other things that trigger this too for me. I understood this dukkha stemming from fear and anxiety, which in turn were fed by my belief that because I'm old in years, I therefore should feel old and should be feeling vulnerable. Curiosity born of some combination of practice and predisposition, led me to try a second season of Expected Unpleasantness. But instead of unpleasantness, something that felt like grace let me experience mindful immediacy and joy. And curiosity led me to investigate that, learn from that. Later, when chronic pain brought me to a place of doubt and fear, what I call wholesome habit energy, also some combination of grace, practice, and predisposition, led me to the immediacy of being with that pain, but adding nothing extra. It took me a while to find that immediacy, and I often lose it when the pain gets, when the pain calls up my unhelpful habit energy around pain. It's okay to fail as long as we keep on getting back up. And some of my conclusions from working with this: a greater freedom inevitably comes from immediacy. Some of the deepest learning comes from opening to what's here now. The koan does indeed appear naturally in daily life. Be grateful for your dukkha, it's your friend. And grace is real if we allow it, which is maybe just another way of acknowledging our innate Buddha nature. And that's my talk. I'd love to hear your comments and questions and how you relate to what I've been saying this morning.
If you're in the room, please raise your hand and I'll bring the microphone to you. Please say your name before you speak. If you're on Zoom, you may type your name into the chat box to be unmuted, or if you'd like, you can type your question or comment into the chat box and Kate will read it aloud for you.
My name is Roberta, and that talk is very timely for me. I am in a place, living in a place where I have a chance to have a garden plot. And I have been hesitating about saying yes because I'm old and I have certain issues and I might get too tired and the digging might be too much and on about whether or not. Because I see taking this garden plot as a responsibility to use it well. And then I realized, I'm thinking about, well, what would my favorite things to be to plant? So this talk made me decide for sure, I am definitely going to take a garden plot and we'll see how it goes.
Well, good.
Thank you very much.
Patrick has a question on Zoom. He says, thanks for this talk. Your analysis of fear is very useful for me in these perilous political times. Bad things may still happen, but with this understanding, I hope I can avoid the paralysis that fear induces.
Yeah, thank you for that. Yeah, as I was developing this talk, I was quite conscious that this also applies to our political times now. I know a lot of us are stressed out about what's been going on in this country and in the world. And yeah, it is kind of the same thing, meeting it with immediacy, meeting it wholeheartedly, and especially meeting our own reactions with that. You know, looking inside and not just being focused on outside.
Thank you for your talk. My name is Guy. I probably am not alone in, observing some of the phenomena you're talking about with what's going on in the world. One of the things that I've tuned into has been these young people, mostly young people in Gaza, who are in the middle of this horrific war, and they're reporting what they're going through. And I've been in awe of them because they're kind of matter-of-factly reporting incredibly the most difficult possible circumstances imaginable. And people ask them, well, how do you get through your day? How do you get up in the morning? And they say, you just do, you know, it's, and it does make one realize that, human beings are capable of, incredible endurance. I mean, we don't give ourselves enough credit, you know, like you said. I mean, the fear is usually anticipation of something, but when you're in the moment of dealing, even with the most horrific conditions, people can step up and are capable of magnificent heroism, even though they didn't even know that they were. So there's something kind of heartening in that, I find, you know. I mean, even though these are absolutely horrific circumstances that we shouldn't wish on anybody, but there's something heartening about it. I don't know.
Okay. I'm not hearing a question, so I'll just say thank you.
Yeah, that's fine.
Hi, this is Genko. Thank you for your talk. I thought of several instances that would be examples of what you're talking about. But the one I will mention is also extending a little bit on the learning style situation, because for me, it's usually not particularly physical. I've gone through a couple of difficult months, different things happening that have been hard for me to work with. And the practice has helped me a great deal in just watching what's going on with the mind. And I think you're absolutely right that fear comes from the mind. There is a physical thing that happens, but what happens then is that the body, there's something that might be triggered in the body, then the mind starts making up stuff about it. And pretty soon you're back into a habit energy or a belief. And so I woke up in the middle of the night one night, just full of, you know, all these feelings of fear and anxiety and shame and guilt and, you know, on and on and on and on. And I tried to kind of wrestle with it for a while. I finally just said, okay, get up and write it down. So this is another learning style for me, is like really working very directly with the mind. So I'm writing it down. I wrote for about a page and a half, and I suddenly looked at it all. And I thought, this is all just bogus. Because I just recognized none of this had any substance to it at all. It was just stuff that the mind was putting out there, mm-hmm. that I was trying to like grab onto and say, oh yeah, this is really true. Ah. And finally it was like, when I could see that, it was just like smoke. Then it just went away. I thought, okay, time to go back to bed and go to sleep. So I found that one of the things that really was really made clear to me with that is there's a difference between thoughts and feelings. And we don't always recognize that. And it's very important to really see that. And so to notice, I have this feeling of fear. Okay, there's this feeling of fear. That doesn't mean that I have to then believe everything that this fear is trying to tell me. Oh, you're in real danger. You're in big trouble right now. You don't have to do that. And that in fact, if you can see that difference, it makes it a lot easier to sort of parse it a little bit and say, okay, so here's the body, needs to be taken care of. Here's the mind going nuts. Okay, I see you. Fine. There's just ways to do this if you can really step back and do that watching of what's going on.
Yeah, thank you. I find also self-compassion is an ingredient there. You know, it's almost like taking care of the little baby inside of us, listening to its cries.
This is Yin Cheng. Thank you for your talk. So you talk about not taking the small sense of self, quite so seriously, you know, letting go of that. And it occurs to me that there's also a risk of saying, well, I'm going to let go of the small self. So I'm going to push it away. So I'm going to take the specific individual details of the particular life and the particular self that I've ended up with right now and try and, you know, kind of push those away and say, I'm going to grasp for the absolute all day. And isn't there kind of a danger there as well?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think not talking about rejecting anything. Rejecting is kind of a dirty word for me. I think as time goes on, if you do this practice, the small self becomes less interesting. We're not as fascinated and strongly identified with it. Because we've learned that, we've seen this constant movement and how how any fixed identity kind of evaporates. You can't hold it still. If we take kind of a forceful approach to it, that doesn't work. And there is a danger there. Because actually, the dukkha that comes with our small self is the gift that we're given to work with.
Thank you.
Thank you for your talk. This is Andy. My question is, what do you notice happens to how you interact with other beings after a wonderful day of mindful skiing?
I've flown. So typically when I'm done skiing, I don't see anybody else.
I said beings, so like spiders or birds.
But I think if I did, my sense is that it all leaves me in a more open place. Kind of the same openness that we find in Sanzen. When somebody comes in for Sanzen, there's a letting go of constraints that occurs, both from their end and my end.
You interact with beings on the ski slopes.
I'm sorry?
So in the ski line or on the ski area, do you notice anything there?
Actually, I love that. I have so many little tidbits of connection on riding up in a chair with somebody. I realize it's not a deep relationship, but
in the moment it is.
There's something very opening and sweet about that, and it makes their day better and it makes my day better.
Same.
Hi, I'm Julia. Thank you for sharing the story about the skiing and the conversation you had with people who reinforced that narrative that you had. And I have a question about that. I'm wondering if that moment could have gone differently somehow. Is there a way to be mindful of the stories that other people are reinforcing in you?
I'm not totally clear on your question.
Yeah.
Say a little more.
Yeah. So you told some folks like, hey, I'm having a rough time skiing. And then they were like, yeah, it might be because like where you are in life, that's really real. Mm. And like you shared that kind of got integrated. Or like, how can think like, can that not be integrated somehow?
Oh, of course. Yeah. It happened that I talked to two people, and that's all I talked to. But if I had talked to 30 people, probably five of them would have said, I don't really get it. No. I'm not. Yeah. Does that somehow invalidate this for you?
I don't understand your question.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not quite clear on what you're asking.
I mean, I've experienced myself, you know, I go and I'm vulnerable with some people and I don't like reflect a ton about the information I'm receiving. Oh. I'm just like, all right, whatever they said must have been true. My question, I think, was answered by you saying you just talk to more people, like increase the sample size. Yeah. Thank you.
That would have been fine too. I didn't do that. And it wasn't like I needed some reinforcement. I was more curious. I wasn't even actually looking for feedback. I was just kind of sharing, and I was a little bit surprised by the feedback that, okay, this isn't just my thing. It's, you know, I talked to two people and two people have felt exactly the same thing in different situations. And part of that is, you know, I don't want to give a Dharma talk that nobody's going to relate to. So my sense is that this is something that people have shared these experiences. Maybe not everybody here, but have shared them in some way. And if other lessons have come to them through this, that's part of what I'm hoping to hear right now.
Yeah. I asked this in part because thinking about the many things I feel like we struggle with as a collective, we end up reinforcing each other's fear. If there's a way to like not do that, that would be great.
Okay. I missed what you were referring to. You were referring to the people who said, oh yeah, it's totally reasonable that you're feeling frightened. That did reinforce my fear. But it also, on some level, pissed me off a little bit. You know, that leave me the freedom to let this evolve the way it's going to for me. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Hi, this is Dio. It seems like that the people and the parts of myself advocating for fear must be right sometimes. And like, I'm not really getting that. Like, I'm tempted to walk away from this talk and ignore my fears. You know? And I'm curious if you could like pull out some of the difference. Like, also, like you said, like what you're doing is different from what thrill seekers are doing. And could you like draw that out a little bit? I don't understand.
Well, that was in the context of kind of the joy that came with it. Mm-hmm. And that some people get joy from just, you know, tiptoeing along the edge of a cliff.
But like when you're tiptoeing, like, how are you not all in that experience? How is that joy different?
I don't know that it is a different joy. I just know that exposing myself to deep, what feels deeply dangerous wasn't what I was trying to describe about myself. I'm not saying that it's always that way.
Okay.
I don't usually tiptoe along the edge of cliffs or go rock climbing. I've done some things like that. And there is, there is a joy also that comes from that of, kind of breaking through your own straitjacket. But it didn't feel that was the experience that I had around the skiing. It wasn't particularly extreme skiing that I was doing.
But as you get older, less extreme becomes dangerous.
It can. I haven't had that experience yet, though.
Okay.
I actually, you know, most injuries I've had were when I was much younger.
Yeah, I guess what I'm hearing is that danger, like the risk of getting hurt is not the thrilling part.
It may be for some people.
Uh-huh.
It just wasn't in this case for me.
Okay. Thank you.
I'm Yusatsu. You mentioned early on in the talk about different learning styles and not necessarily you weren't advocating for people to change, to seek change. And it, for me personally, physical learning has not been part of my lifelong learning style. However, taking on some ceremonial roles here at Dharma Rain, I did find myself stepping into a learning style that was pretty far out of my normal way of learning, but that's kind of the only way to learn it. So from that perspective, adopting a new way of learning can also be a growth potential. I just wanted to point that out from my recent experience, that I didn't have to say, no, I can't learn by physical doing. Here right. I am. I will learn by physical doing, because that's where I am right now.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I didn't hone in on that, but that's definitely true.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Okay.
Yep. My name is Liz. I would just like to acknowledge that the times in my life where I've decided I'm all in, generally the outcome has been overall a good life lesson in one way or another. But I'm curious, you mentioned, I can't remember the exact words you used, but you mentioned your dukkha and like how that becomes part of the process. And can you speak a little bit around that? Like, you mean specifically being curious with it or that kind of thing?
Yeah. So it's our dukkha, our sense of dissatisfaction. There are a whole lot of different flavors of that. But generally speaking, a sense of dissatisfaction. I don't like this. Play out as I like. I deserve better, and so on. If we use that, and instead of focusing outwards at what we think is the problem, focusing inwards about what is going on with us. How does this feel? Where is it? What is my mind spinning doing about it? That's a lot more productive than blaming what's out there. And in that sense, dukkha is our friend. I've heard this in so many different ways and felt it in so many different ways. It can be something somebody says to you that makes you tighten up. Instead of spinning a story about that person and that person's problems and so on, or about your own problems, taking it to heart that, oh yeah, I really am screwed up. Instead, just feeling what's going on, and letting go as much of the story as possible. And what you're feeling is probably some hurt. And that's instructive. That's where Yeah, that's where dukkha reaches out to us and kind of pulls us forward a little bit.